You're listening to a podcast from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
Everybody, Masal Khair, and welcome to the Beirut Center, the Carnegie Middle East Center. It's my pleasure to have with us today our colleague from Moscow, Dr. Alexei Malyshenko, who is an expert on Russian Islamic affairs in particular. And he's been with the Carnegie Center in Moscow for many, many years. Alexei has written over 20 books on various topics relating to things he's speaking about today and other things as well, and is well known in these circles. We've asked him to discuss with us today sort of the general situation of the Islamic populations in Russia today, and particularly Russian and Kremlin policy towards the Islamic question, which perhaps in Moscow is three-tiered at least, Islamic Muslims themselves, which about maybe 10% of the population, and then the neighboring states, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, and so on, all the way down to Afghanistan, Iran, Turkey, which is the neighborhood of southern Russia, and then the Arab Middle East in general, where a lot has been going on. And certainly in the last 2 years, the events of the Arab uprisings, the Arab Spring, the Arab Winter, depending on how you look at it, has had reverberations in Moscow, whether it's about dynamic for political reform or change, and there were protests in Moscow, or the rise of political Islam as the main movements winning some of these changes in the Middle East, becoming a cause of great concern in the Kremlin, in Moscow, for Prime Minister and then President Putin. And we've all seen certainly the activism in Russian foreign policy towards the issue of Syria. So there's certainly very, very much going on there, and we're very, very keen and interested to listen to Dr. Alexei's remarks. He will make an opening set of observations, half an hour, give or take, and then he's very eager to listen to your comments, your questions, and the issues you would like to talk about. We have some maps circulating in the background for those of us who are not fully familiar with the geography of Russia's states and the Islamic communities there, which Alexei will tell us more about. So without further ado, Alexei, welcome to Beirut. And we are very eager to listen to your comments and to have a discussion with you.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you very much. Thanks for invitation. Indeed, I'll attempt to give you a general picture of what we call in Russia Muslimhood, or Russian population. I apologize that I cannot talk in Arabic because I forget some language. I understand, but to speak it's very difficult for me, despite I spent several years in Northern Africa as a translator from Arabic. But.
It was a while ago.
Yes. So, indeed, it's interesting to see at Russian map, at Russia's politics, taking into consideration what took place in the Middle East. Just as a preliminary some remark, to my mind, Russia as a nation, Russian Muslims, Russian government, Putin himself, our great president, weren't ready, were unprepared for such events. Yes, as by the way, the rest of the world. But before I start explaining what I think about it, I have to give you several general objections. And the point number one is how many Muslims we have in Russia. Indeed, it's a big question because the difference between number of Russian Muslims, of Muslims in Russia, hesitates from 3 million to 33 million. It's interesting, indeed. In general, Putin, or Medvedev, our prime minister, they mention 17 or 60 and a half millions of Muslims who live in Russia, in Russian Federation. But these are only Russian citizens. And we have to take into consideration the huge number of Muslims coming to Russia from Central Asia, from Caucasus. If we take Muslim citizens of Russia, plus migrations, we'll have around 20-21 million. It's much more than 10% of the population. And when sometimes Putin himself, by the way, he said not about 17, but about 20-21 million, he's right. Because they are people who live in our country. There is another statistic. Some Russian, some researchers say that we have only 3 million Muslims. Why? Because they think that the Muslim is a man, is a human being who all the time spends in mosque or who visits some mosque every Friday, who is a real believer, and so on. To my opinion, the Muslims in Russia, just I don't insist about other countries, but to my mind, some Russian is a man who share the idea of Islam and who feels that he belongs to Islamic civilization. He could be good Muslim, bad Muslim, but he is Muslim. Yes? So when I hear about 3 million of Muslims in Russian Federation, just I don't believe. I don't believe, and well, maybe it's a certain academic opinion, but it's not true. Why sometimes we can read in articles and in other publications about 33 million of Muslims? This figure is given of top-level Russian clergymen, some Russian Muslim clergymen. And sometimes they insist that official Russian statistic diminuates the number of Muslims. But also it's not true. So let's think about 21 or 20 Muslims in Russian Federation, including, I emphasize it once again, people who come from Central Asia, from Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and other Muslim countries. Another problem, sometimes also you can read about Russian Islam. It's a mistake. There is no Russian Islam. It is Islam in Russia. And practically, in fact, we have two big communities, Muslim communities, inside our country. One, Caucasian, approximately 7 or 8 million of Russian citizens. Well, where is it?
Some help me, works.
Please. It works?
I don't know.
Oh, for me too? No, just
they rotate by themselves. I think.
I don't know.
Works, but you can see it on the
you
screen.
You can't see it on the screen. That's the problem.
This. And then I have to press on what?
You have to press on the middle, on the red one.
Oh.
And you can see it there, but you can see it on the screen.
On the screen, it just reflects. Yeah. Unfortunately, sorry about that. So we're going to have to skip that.
But where?
Or you can just wait.
It's useless. I am not an engineer. So, excuse me, please, but still. I'll work soon with my pencil.
So, you want this one?
Yeah. Okay. This is, just a minute, the territory of some Russian, from one Russian community, so-called Volga River. So-called Volga River region.
We need some disappear. Stop at what?
Yes. I found this one. And the second one is the Caucasus, with its famous Chechnya. But at the same time, I have to emphasize that in general, Muslim population is some disseminated across all Russia. For instance, as example, the number of Muslims in the capital of Russia, in Moscow, it hesitates between 1 million and 1 million and a half. It's the biggest Muslim city of Europe. Maybe for somebody it sounds funny, but it is so. Approximately between 1 million and 1 million and a half. Besides, we have some regions, some here, where the Muslim population reach something between 10% and 20%. So it's not half Muslim regions, but the number is big, very significant, and the Muslim presence in these territories, it impacts on general situation, on social situation, on the political situation, and each administration. Here, they have to take into consideration this Muslim presence. Sometimes they do, sometimes they do not. In the cases when they do not, we have some upheavals, some afflictions between Muslims and administrations, between Muslims and the rest of the population, and so on. And this is one of the factors which push the raising and Russian nationalism and the nationalism of minorities, Muslim minorities. If, for instance, 10 years ago maybe, or 15 years ago, it wasn't a big deal for the country. At the moment, the problem is raising.
Oops.
As you know that the Soviet Union, before its collapse, before the emergence of newly born post-Soviet state, it was an atheistic state and society. While religion was considered as a sin, as a something bad, or something for old men and weak women. It's a formula that sometimes were used in Soviet official propaganda. But after the collapse of the Soviet Union, the situation totally, absolutely changed. And the processes that began after the collapse of the USSR, we called it sometime revitalization of religion, or rebirth of religion, and among them, of course, Islam. Of course, Islam, to my mind, the Islamic Renaissance in Russia, in post-Soviet Russia, was very active, very impulsive. And since the start of rebirth, Islam in the Russian Federation began to become politicized. And not only on Caucasus, by the way. I remember the time when Yeltsin and Putin, of course, after him, they said that's impossible. How could it be? Some religion cannot be politicized. Till now, I think that they refuse to recognize it. But anyway, unofficially, it is very well known, and scholars and majority of politicians, they share that the thought that Islam is very politicized in Russia, and it's normal, by the way, to my mind, because one of the main feature of Islam as a religion, as a tradition, as a culture, is that he deals with not only religious problems, but with political, social, and so on problems. By the way, who was the Prophet Muhammad? He was a politician, a real politician. But of course, the politicization of religion and namely of Islam, it created and it continues to create some problems because Russia is a multi-confessional, multinational country. And when some political ideas, some social and political ambitions take form of religion, well, it leads, of course, to some troubles. It could be normal. It could pass without any real troubles. But as you know, Russia has Caucasus, and Russia has had two Chechen wars. And in Caucasus, among some Russian population, since the beginning of 90s, there was a total frustration with Moscow official political course, with Moscow approach to Caucasus, and with Moscow approach to Islam. Since approximately 93-94, we observe an instability in this region. In Caucasus, practically in every republic. And when the misunderstanding began between federal center, between Moscow and Chechnya, it took form of jihad. That was the first some jihad on the post-Soviet land. Well, to my mind, the reasons of this war between federal center and Chechnya, or we can call it as a civil war, the reasons were nationalist and political and economic and so on, but very quickly it took form of a religious war. So that's true. And everybody understands how difficult it is to do something when the resistance of people, of population, is developing under religious a slogan. I think in the Moscow they didn't understand it. They didn't understand it. Practically, even when Putin had come and when he started the second Chechen war, he didn't understand what he was doing. But anyway, because of a frustration, because of disappointment with official government, with presidents, with Kremlin, with everything which were coming from Moscow, the region, the North Caucasus, not only Chechnya, but practically main republics of the North Caucasus, and Dagestan and Kabardino-Balkaria and so on, they felt a certain disappointment, a frustration. And they didn't know how to live in the frames of the Russian Federation. And from that point of view, when they turned to Islam, when they began to appeal more and more to Islamic values, first of all, I think it was a reaction against Moscow. And that is, and that was, very understandable. If you are so aggressive toward our republics, if you cannot start a real reconstruction of political system, social system, if you cannot improve the situation of a man, of a society, what shall we do? We have to find something else. And a lot of people, I don't know, maybe half of the population began to think about so-called Islamic alternative. If your constitution, I mean if your, some Russian constitution, constitution of Russian Federation, if it doesn't work, if your law doesn't work, if your administration appointed from Moscow is totally corrupted, just I don't want to tell about some criminal situation, about poverty, about the huge distance between those who are rich and who are poor, how could we live? How could we survive? And in that situation, since since the end, maybe from the 97, 98, more and more people in Caucasus began to address to Islam, to Islamic alternative, how to reconstruct their life, how to reconstruct the society and even political system sometimes on the basis of Islam. Of course, we have to recognize that the opposition in this region sometimes took a very radical, extremist forms. I don't want to justify terrorism. You know that a lot of terrorist acts were committed in Moscow, even in Moscow, who is very far from the region. But anyway, I repeat, I don't want to justify. It was a reaction. It was a final reaction. What? And when sometimes I am asked if it's possible that once again we see in Moscow or in some other cities of Russia a terrorist activity, as usual, I answer yes. Because all kind of political problems, social problems, and all of them aren't solved. There is no solution. Putin promised, and his administration, the prime minister, all his team, he promised so many times to improve the situation, to give finally the solution of some of this problem. But just some disbelief, but they did nothing. They spoke a lot about the situation in Caucasus. They spoke a lot about extremist Islamic activity. But how to avoid it, they don't know. They don't know. That's why, as usual, and Putin and Yeltsin, by the way, before, they treated Islamic opposition as gangsters, as terrorists, and so on. Well, of course, as I told you before, there is a lay of terrorism. There is a lay of religious extremism, but they are in minority. In the rest of the people, the rest of the Muslim in this area, they want peace. They want some normal life. But I think that the Russian Federation is very far of reaching this goal. So it means that the instability in the region will continue, will stay, and it will develop on the slogan of Islam, and that's normal, that's very typical. So that's very typical. And by the way, when some official Russian ideologists, they continue to say that the main problem is impact from abroad, from Saudi Arabia, from Persian Gulf, from somebody else, from Al-Azhar, from Cairo, they lie. If in the mid of 90s, indeed that was an influence from the Arab world, at the moment, practically it is absent. If we accept, the problem of Arab revolution. At the moment, I tell about money who were coming from Saudi Arabia, from Egypt, and so on, about missions, Islamic radical missions, who came from some of the same countries. At the moment, some money, financial support is coming from within Russia. From within Russia. I spoke, by the way, to some of my colleagues from Saudi Arabia, and they said that no, they don't participate at the moment in Islamic activity in the area. No. as I told you before, there are two main communities in the Russian Federation, two Muslim communities. One of these is Caucasus, with its radical Islamism, political activity under slogans. the idea of Islamic alternative, and so on. Even sometimes they say about independence, but don't exaggerate when you read in some newspapers about that there is a resistance who demand independence for Caucasus. It's exaggeration. Majority, maybe 90% of the population in the area, they don't want independence. They don't want to live in the frames of Russian Federation, in Russian frontiers, inside, but being based on Islamic law. And it's very interesting, indeed. No separatism, no idea how to get rid from Moscow, but how to make it, how to make a Kremlin to recognize that in the North Caucasus they are right to carry out, I would say, Islamic traditions. As to Tatars, as to the heart of Russia, the center of some Russian federation, the main population is some Tatars and Bashkirs. As usual, I can say that some radicalism in these areas some reach a high level. Well, and Tatars, who are 5 million of Tatars and 1.5 million of Bashkirs, who live in Russia, in Russian Federation, well, they are similar to Russians. And practically, at the beginning of the 90s, nobody paid big attention to Islamic Renaissance in this area, because they have a habit to be among Christians. The level of nationalism, the level of religiosity in Bashkortostan, in Tatarstan, biggest Muslim republic of Russian Federation, this level was, I would say, some not so high. But last year the situation began to change, because there was a conflict between federal central and Tatarstan and Bashkortostan. The nationalism in both republics, as well as Russian big nationalism, continue to become more and more influent. And because of the creation of radical circles among Tatars and Bashkirs. Next reason is the penetration of radical influence from the North Caucasus. Caucasian are going to the north. Caucasian domestic migration. We leave the Caucasus and go to typical Russian regions. And they have some communications with Tatars, with Bashkirs, who before were moderate, totally moderate. Besides, there is a problem of Islamic migration from Central Asia. And from Uzbekistan, from Tajikistan, and the rest of these countries, from some the rest of these some regions, some people are crossing some Russian frontiers. They began to work, and they work during years. And also they accumulate some links sometimes with Russian Muslim citizens, yes? And besides, from Central Asia, radical Islam, idea of Islamic radicalism are penetrating to Russia itself. At the moment, we have a lot of circles in the heart of Russia composed with Caucasians, domestic migration, Tatars and Bashkirs, who live all the time in their places, and Central Asians. Before, it never took place. So the process of, I would say, internationalization of Islam. Before, we had only, Chechen groups or Dagestani groups of Tatar groups. At the moment, we have a lot of international groups of some Muslims with more and less but radical ideology. And radicalization continues. some continents, and in particular not in Caucasus, where the level of this radicalization all the time was very high, but also in moderate Muslim communities. And government, some Kremlin, is not prepared for such evolution. And 2 years ago, Arab Spring took place. At the beginning, well, believe me, practically nobody paid attention to it. I mean Muslims. Well, it's far from us, and we want to keep our stability, and so on. That was a very typical blah, blah, blah. And in Kremlin, and Putin himself, he thought that, well, there is no danger, there is no problem, the Middle East is one thing, and Russian Muslimhood is a totally some another something. But some Russian, some researchers, they thought that the reaction, the impact of situation in the Middle East, in the Arab world, its impact is postponed for Russia. It will take place, but not today. That we told 2 years ago. Last year it begins. When the Muslim Brothers came to power in Egypt, and it was after the events in Tunisia, then some war in Syria, and so on. But most of all, I repeat, it is example of Tunisia and Egypt. Somebody among Russian Muslim politicians began to ask themselves and to ask Putin, if you want to establish good relations with Muslim brothers in Egypt, and you recognize that it's a will of people and so on, why you refuse to recognize some domestic opposition? We share with Muslim brothers the same idea. And you treat us as gangsters. And meanwhile, you continue to invite Mohammed Morsi to Moscow. Why you talk to Hamas? Why Hamas came to Moscow to negotiate, well, several times, maybe 10 times, maybe more? And in Caucasus, you refuse to talk to people who share the same ideology. They want Islamic State, and we want Islamic State. They want Shariat, and we want Shariat. And by the way, still, a Muslim brothers is prohibited in Russia, because it was recognized, I think, in 2006 or 2007, a criminal organization, a terrorist organization. So how could it be? You invited a president who is a member of this organization. It's absurdity. It's not me who asked Putin. These questions comes from Muslim society. Yes, and no solution, because all the time, and Russian TV and Russian politicians, they continue to repeat that we recognize a new administration in Tunisia and in Egypt, and we will recognize everything, because it was done by people. This is one of the reasons why Islamic political activity in Russia is becoming more and more active, more and more strong. That's why they attempt once again to create some radical Islamic movement and so on. And I do believe that these people will be successful, because it is their right to create such organizations. So they will do it. Even more, it's very funny, but being Muslim brothers, they want to stay loyal to Putin, loyal to Kremlin. Next problem is the situation in Syria. Till the beginning of this year, 2013, practically Russian Muslim didn't pay attention to the problem of Syria. Well, some let them do what some they want. But in January, in February, several manifestations in Caucasus, in Tatarstan, in other republics took place, and they supported Islamic opposition. They supported Islamic opposition. And indeed, also they began to say that Bashar Assad, he's not a Muslim, and Putin has to change his political course and so on. And a lot of manifestation. We support our Syrian brother in faith. And it's very interesting that official Moscow had no reaction. They don't know what to do. Because they aren't against Putin. They aren't against the Kremlin. Simply they want to support their brothers. Just I don't believe, of course, that that Putin will change his approach to Bashar Assad, to Syria, and so on. But it is a factor. It is a factor. And even those Muslims who are loyal to Kremlin, they refuse to recognize. They refuse to support official Russian foreign politics. Anyway, I think that the next round, I would say, of politicization of Islam and political engagement of Muslim and Islamic slogan will continue. And don't forget that I mentioned before the problem of migration. Migrants from Uzbekistan and from Tajikistan, from Kyrgyzstan, they also brought ideas about Arab Spring. They arrived to Russia from the countries with authoritarian regimes, very similar to Egypt and to Tunisia and maybe even to Syria. Of course, if it's not a civil war. And they discuss the same questions. Why it was possible in Egypt, and why it isn't possible to Uzbekistan? So the same regimes, the same corruptions in Uzbekistan, in Kyrgyzstan, in Tajikistan, well, even in Kazakhstan. So the same families, the same problems. Why we couldn't do the same? Why in Uzbekistan, for instance, or Kazakh president Nursultan Nazarbayev, he wants to deal with Egypt, he wants to deal with new regimes. And he refused to recognize Islamic activity with the same ideology. So it will lead to what? I don't know. I don't know because to give you a final solution, a final decision, for me it's impossible. To my mind, it's a normal when opposition in Russian Federation is developing under religious slogan. It's normal. But at the same time, officially following Russian constitution, some religion, some must be divided from the politics. But they are combined, very combined, and this combination will continue to progress. One example. It's very interesting. It was in December, I think, of last year, when administrations, president of Dagestan, understood that the situation in his republic in the North Caucasus is becoming more and more in trouble, he invited one of the main faqih theologists from Arab world, Karadagi, Ali Muhyiddin Karadagi, and he asked him to make a presentation in a Muslim audience to say something about necessity to be more moderate and so on. And what Karadagi did? He openly said, in the presence of President of Dagestan, that you have to behave as a Muslim brothers. We all are Muslim brothers. And practically there is no big difference between you and Muslim brothers in Egypt. We have the same goal, but we have different tools. President of Dagestan, who is a very clever man, he was shocked. But just, I don't understand. How after that it's possible to work? So I don't want to make any conclusion because it's useless. Some believe me. The situation will develop. To my mind, the Kremlin, Putin and his team, they don't know what to do with Islam. They don't know what kind of politics they have to carry out. Even more, sometimes they don't understand what Islam means. For them, it's something very foreigners. Despite they recognize multi-confessionalism, but they are afraid of Islam. And after and since the beginning of Arab Spring, they are becoming more and more fearful. So the situation is in Russia. From the point of view of Islam, Islamic activity, unpredictable or predictable. When I say predictable, I'm very afraid that radical activity in all Russian Muslim regions will increase. By the way, it happens, and this is one of the consequences of what all of us, we had some here in Middle East. So just I spoke 40 minutes.
Yes.
If you have some questions and if I'm able to answer, you're welcome.
Thank you, Alexei, very, very much. Really. Gave us a very rich, nuanced, troubling perhaps, view of the complex situation of Islam in Russia, Islam and Russia, Islam and the Kremlin, and I'm sure there's a lot of comments or questions, and the floor is to our audience. Raise your hand, introduce yourself, you can ask in English or Arabic. So, yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. Reed Clark, I speak with an American accent. How would you compare and contrast the escalation of fervor of the Orthodox Christian Church post 91-92 with that of, and it's a question, is it purely Sunni or is there Shiites in the East as well? So the comparison and the contrast, as they both rose in fervor, how are they the same, how are they different?
You mean Orthodox Church?
Yes.
Yes. So maybe one more question.
That's a ritual.
So,
take that.
Okay. First of all, thank you for your question, but it deserves a book. To simplify, first of all, Russian Orthodox Church is very politicized. It was to be very close to Putin, to Kremlin. New Patriarch and his boys, they pretend to participate in all kind of political activity and social activity. Or would it be in education, in military field, and so on? They are very, very conservative. Very conservative. And very, very xenophobic. Because Russian Orthodox Church has never seen a reform, even on a very small level, It's something very, very, well, it's a negative factor for Russian development. Because all the time, as example, and by the way, from that point of view, they are similar to some Islamic radical For instance, as example, there are no human rights. There is a Western style of human rights and Orthodox style of human rights, and they write it. So I think it's Orthodox, a church, on this stage of development, it's a big obstacle. There was a chance of reform. It could be when Patriarch became Patriarch, a Kirill, but he didn't use this chance. There were that time expectations that he will come and maybe indeed he attempt to reconstruct some church as an institution, and he will introduce something new in a church ideology, but not. When he discovered that he was able to be on the first rank of the politician and very close to Putin, he decided that it's better for him. Hmm.
Rex mentioned also the Sunni and Shia aspect.
Sunni and Shia.
Before we leave that, is there any friction between this new Islam and the Orthodox Church in the villages?
You mean some Shia Sunni in Caucasus or where?
No, I think his question was...
It could either be taken with the any Sunni Christian conflict, or any Sunni Shiite conflict.
Well, I don't believe if there is a conflict between Orthodox and Sunni. Practically, we have no conflict between Sunni and Shiite, despite in Dagestan. In Dagestan, it happened maybe, a month ago, but it's not a big deal. As usual, there is a cohabitation. The problem is in Azerbaijan, is neighboring to Russia. So there are some misunderstanding between some Shia and Sunni. So that's true. And as a joke, you see, 3 years ago we discovered a Shia community in the heart of Russia, some not far from Tatarstan. But all of them, they were Russian. And it was a joke. But they said that so they were some Shia.
Yes.
Hi, my name is Mehrdad Farahmand. We know that majority of the Russian Muslims are of Turkic origin. I mean, like Tatars, Bashkirs, and all those in Caucasus. So is there Turkish nationalism playing any role among in this Muslim community? Take it into consideration that we have the Turkish model in Turkey, and also we have those Turkish institutions who are very active in Central Asia and Caucasus, the special educational groups. So is there any is this element at all?
It is present in Central Asia, in Kyrgyzstan a little bit, in Kazakhstan. As to Russia, no. You see, how could I say it? The idea of a Turkism is not so popular. Is not so popular because they are rather nationalist, including Tatars. By the way, Tatars, they say that they are European Muslims and they don't need any Turkey as a teacher. Practically, some the same thing we have in Caucasus, because they say that we have our own culture and that's all. Indeed, in 90s, Turkey attempt to do something. Even in 96, 97, Ankara proposed to Dagestan to use its experience in the field of fighting against Wahhabism, but they failed. And when Diyanet, a ministry of Turkey, they made some proposals, they were rejected. So I think that a Turkish influence in Russia. It's not a big deal at the moment.
Yes. The microphone.
I would like to look at the two categories, Shia and Sunni, and sorry, Abir Shaban from the Lebanese American University. Now, we find it convenient to look at the Sunni as one category, but rightly so in your dynamics of Russian Islam, you speak about the majority of Hanafi, traditional Hanafi mm-hmm. Muslims mm-hmm. In Russia, and probably we have the same, and the radical Wahhabis, which is probably a more modern, militarized, and political Islam that is coming into Russia, mm-hmm. and probably it's the same case in Lebanon as well as in Syria. Now, the question is, when we look at an entity that is actually going to create a change, don't you think that the Wahhabi Islam are a small minority in comparison to the larger traditional Sunni Islam? And the case in Syria is actually very, very a case at point when we look at the Hanafi and Shafi'i, and probably they are resistant to this Wahhabi invasion, 1% of the Sunnis in Syria and probably 5% of the Sunnis in Lebanon. So how do you see that dynamic in Russia?
Oh, I see. I understood your question, but it's not so easy to answer it. What I mean, when you mentioned the Wahhabi, who they are, maybe there are differences between Wahhabians and Salafi and fundamentalist Islam, the Musulin. Maybe not. But indeed, you are right, but there is a confrontation between traditional Islam and non-traditional Islam. Some Islam, and it seems to me that non-traditional Islam, including Wahhabism or Salafism, well, some as you like, it's becoming more active and more successful. More successful, and not only in Caucasus, but in Tatarstan too. Why? Because this radical Islam, this new Islam, some let me say, is more active, more interesting for young generation. And I know from my colleagues when, for instance, Hanafi imams arrive to some city or to village to talk about religion to believers, young generation asks some of them, if you want to talk with us about your Hanafism or Tatar Islam, enough. We prefer to talk about something new, something much more interesting. So well, not radical, not non-traditional Islam, I would say, is more and more active and more popular. We have no some reliable information. But to my mind, maybe half of young generation, they are more inclined to this Islam and some not to Hanafi Islam.
Hi, Janaina Herrera. I'm from New Generation Consulting, based in Beirut. I have a question for you regarding the historical root of the politicization of Islam. It seems that the process started right after the fall of the Soviet Union. Does it mean that before that, the Islamic communities of the Soviet Union were buying the narrative of the egalitarian narrative of the Soviet Union? And that, unlike Yugoslavia, there was no really a problem before the fall of the Soviet Union? Or was there a deeper problem, a historical root?
Also, it's a good question. What can I tell? When Bolshevik, when communists came to power in 30s, they discovered that there is a big difference between Muslims in Caucasus, Central Asia, and Tatars, some Russia itself. So Islam among Tatars was practically exterminated. Mosques, preachers, a system of education. In Caucasus, they gave him an official permission to do something. In Republic like Dagestan or Ingushetia, even they kept this Sufi fraternities. That was a problem. Some of their leaders were put in prisons, but it existed. In Central Asia, Islam continued to be present in the Soviet time. That's true. even presidents, even party leaders, leaders of the Communist Party, they were Muslims. And Islam in Central Asia, in republics, Uzbekistan and Tajikistan, that was one of the social factors, the factor of some regulation of social relations with their mahallas, communities, and so on. In Kazakhstan, it is another song, as in Kyrgyzstan. But two key countries of Central Asia, Tajikistan and Uzbekistan, all the time they were Muslim Soviet republics. Even we know this, some of the cases when, for instance, some communist leader, after his death, he could be buried twice, as a communist and as a Muslim. It's not a joke. So it's different. And I repeat, it's a very important for Tatars and Bashkirs. Their Islam also was practically exterminated physically.
My name is Ibrahim Tabet. I want to ask you to what extent the religious dimension has an influence on Russian foreign policy. By the religious dimension, it has two dimensions. One internal, the problems that you just mentioned between the Kremlin and the Russian citizens. And the other dimension is external, what's happening especially in the Arab world. We notice, for example, that the Western powers, France, Great Britain, etc., are very much influenced by what's happening in this Arab world, so-called Arab Spring, what's happening in Syria, and they are really thinking over their foreign policy again in view of these changes. Do you think that the Russian foreign policy will be affected by this religious dimension?
And yes and no. When after collapse of the Soviet Union, Russia, so-called a new Russia, practically lost majority of ties with Arab world and Muslim world, after Putin came to power, he decided to reestablish it. The ideology of this reestablishing, it consisted in that some Russia doesn't belong to the West, Russia doesn't belong to the East, so it's a bridge. It's one of the bridges and maybe the best bridge between the West and the rest. Yes? Plus the ideology of Eurasianism. Some you know what it is, yes? Some Eurasianism. To my mind, Eurasianism, in particular, neo-Eurasianism, it's a stupidity, it's absurdity, but it became a part of Russian foreign ideology, or ideology of foreign politics. In 2000s, 2004... 3, 4, 5, 6, Putin made a lot of visits to Muslim countries, to Arab countries, to Saudi Arabia, to Algeria, to Egypt, to Malaysia, and so on. He wanted to present, to position Russia as a country which is between. And for Moscow, for Russia, for himself, it is very helpful to play such role and to be in trialogue. The West, the Muslim world, and Russia with this special position, who is ready to explain the goals of Islamic world and who is ready to explain to Muslims what West is. So that was the first years of Putin. He was very naive. In 2004, if I'm not mistaken, some joint organization, Islamic Conference. But it received nothing. The relations between Russia and the Muslim countries and Arab countries practically didn't change as it was. Putin made a lot of mistakes. As example, from Saudi Arabia, he went directly to Libya. And before he talked to King, then he talked to Muammar al-Qaddafi as some his a best friend. And the majority of Muslim political elites didn't believe to Putin. So that was a total failure, some total failure. Then it was a problem of Russian trade with Arab world. And to my mind, you see the chance for Russia to come back to Middle East are minimal. Because all the time, the key idea of Putin is that some Russia must get back a Soviet heritage. Some, not all. But as it was before, there is America with Russia. But time... No, it's impossible. It's impossible. And by the way, look... Look what Russia has as far as the Syria is concerned. Why Putin continue to support Bashar by all means? One of the main reasons is a psychological reason. Because it's the last man with whom Kremlin is able to talk. He's a son of Hafiz Assad, yes? This is the last some remnant of the Soviet time. That's why it's so painful if he disappears. And psychology for Putin, it's a very important thing. Maybe you know, maybe not, but since he became, for the first time, a president of Russia, he attempted to construct his relations with post-Soviet presidents on the private base. So not officially, but we are friends. So I'm sorry, but maybe with some exceptions, maybe Algeria, maybe something else, but the relations between Russia and Arab world will stay on the minimal level.
Yes. My name is Khalid from Iskwa. My question is, are there any Russian Muslims who went to fight as jihadists in Syria for religious motives? And how does the Kremlin look at this? And how do you predict it in the future?
Well, we don't know how many Muslims are from Russia arrived to Syria. Somebody tells about 50, 30. There is another opinion, several hundred. I have read several miles. Oh, thousands. Some miles is... Presse Francais. Well, I think it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal because just they. Of course, it's very interesting. It's helpful, but I cannot imagine that that their input in the war so will be big. The problem is that what they will do after they will come back to Chechnya or to Tatarstan or to somewhere else, because they achieved additional military expertise, and it could be used. Just I think it's my some private opinion, some based on my. On my private information, it must be in Syria something 30, around 30 from Chechnya and Dagestan, and maybe 11, 12 from Tatarstan. When they come back, that will be problem because they will be considered in their republics as a hero. So that will be interesting.
Just my question about the Kremlin's reaction. Are there any procedures for...
The Kremlin's reaction is very simple. It's very simple. They are terrorists. They are paid by Saudi... not by Saudi Arabia, but some some extremist international organizations. And besides, their presence in Syria are provoked by some Western powers, as usual.
Any other new hands? Yes, we'll come back. Somebody, let's come up to a microphone, please.
Lubna Abi Khalil. My question is, you mentioned some protests happening in Russia.
Yeah.
Were they only an action of Muslim migrants or Muslim Russians, or were there other Russian people who just were in support for the Syrian?
In Caucasus, that was Muslims. Russian Muslims, I mean some Russian Caucasian Muslims, are from Dagestan, from Kabardino-Balkaria, from Ingushetia. In Tatarstan, there were people also from Central Asia, but majority were Tatars, and no Russians. Oh, I'm sorry, you touched the problem of Muslim Russian. So that I don't know, because there are several hundred, maybe several thousands of Russian Muslims. They could participate, but here I don't know.
I have a question that maybe links a bit to something Rex asked earlier, but the Middle East, or the Muslim Middle East now, is also in a state of civil war between sort of a Sunni coalition and a Shia coalition. Iran and Maliki and so on, and it's being played out partly in Syria, partly in other places. And Russia's or Putin's position on Syria has put him in a way on one side of the civil war in the region. My question is, from the Kremlin's point of view, is there a differentiation to them between, when they look at the Middle East and these different powers and so on, between sort of the Sunni Muslim Brotherhood and so on, between Iran and Hezbollah?
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. I read a couple of articles discovering this position that some Russia and this, as before Soviet Union, support Shia against Sunni. It's a stupidity. Because Soviet Union supported Gamal Abdel Nasser. Khrushchev and Brezhnev, they hadn't any idea about the distinctions inside Islam. Shia, Sunni, and so on. The same trick, I think, is with Putin. 3 years ago, or 5 years ago, he was in Caucasus, and he said, addressing to Muslim Shafi'i, Some he said, my Shia friends. So
sounds like Shafi.
For him, it's not a big deal.
All right. Rex, and then you.
With 1 to 1.5 million Muslims, Russian Muslims in Moscow, can you tell us where they have placed themselves in senior positions and secondly, are they? Can you group them and say they are particularly influential in certain academic areas or manufacturing, like the Armenians were in as fighter pilots and aviation and so forth? I mean, is there that sort of a categorization that can be done?
First of all, we have now in Moscow, I could say, Muslim places or Muslim ghettos. And the Council of Mufti of Russia, a lot of times, some repeated, we have to avoid creation of Muslim ghettos. So some Muslims are some disseminated. We have some, I would say, Caucasian Muslim coalitions or groups based on ethnic a background. We have a certain coordination between Caucasian Muslim communities and Tatars clergymen cooperation. We had no mixed jamaat, mixed communities composed with Caucasians, Tajiks and Uzbeks in Moscow. But 2 years ago, the process began when there are international communities in Moscow, in Siberia, in Ural. It began before. But in Moscow, they don't feel themselves as a Moscow Ummah. They are totally different. But at the same time, the main trend is to establish links. And they do it. And that's normal. The problem is that we have 1.5 million and of 5 mosques. That's all. 5 mosques. Yeah? And when Muslim attempts to construct a new mosque, one more. It happened last year. We had a huge manifestation of Russians who were against it. I gave that time a lot of interviews, and I attempt to prove to people that it's necessary to construct mosques, that Moscow badly needs. No. And the head of Moscow, he said, we don't want to construct a new mosque because Muslims, majority of Muslims in Moscow, it's migration. They aren't Russian citizens. I think that in a couple of years we'll receive in Moscow an explosion because of lack of mosques.
Again, I have a question. Now, when we look at the Iranian revolution, it was very easy for the Wilayat al-Faqih to be established, taking into consideration that the Jafari is one madhab. So it has its own school of law. Now, if we look at the Sunnis, they are pretty much fragmented into different theological schools.
Four,
and now the Wahhabi, you can call them a fifth. Okay, now, how feasible it is, do you think, to have a centralized Sunni Islamic state in Egypt or in any of these states that are actually having these revolutions, taking into consideration the fragmentation of the Sunni category, if you wish?
I didn't think about it because I'm not Muslim. You see, indeed, I don't know. Really, I don't know. I'm afraid of one thing. I'm afraid of unification.
You think so?
Because when somebody wants to unificate something, it will some lead to certain a Soviet ideology. So I have no answer.
No.
May Al-Sayr, Al-Jumhuriya newspaper. I would like to ask, after the allegiance of Al-Nusra to Al-Zawahiri, it seems that the Geneva Accord will be applied as a base for political settlement in Syria. So Russian officials say that they were right in their approach to the Syrian crisis from the first, because they threatened of the Islamic fear in Syria. So what's your comment on that?
Well, it's a question not to me, it's a question to Putin, because sometimes he treats Muslim brothers as his friends, sometimes as enemies. Well, I think that one of the fears of Russia is the creation of Islamic coalition or a participation of some Muslim brothers or somebody else in Syria. Yes. Why? Because it will push Russian Muslims some forward. Yes. That will be another example. When, for instance, Russia was against, but it happened. And finally, in Syria, they received a coalition with Islamic participation. Yes. So, some Syria, Egypt, Tunisia. Well, and why not some here in Caucasus?
The Russian officials say that Geneva Accord is the base for the settlement, so they think that they were right in their approach. So there are fears of Islamic coalitions there that will, after, you know, these terroristic events nowadays, so they are supporting their point of view by these actions. Don't you think that, you know, before this allegiance, there were news that Americans would let the situation go on and giving time to insurgency to topple the equilibrium there, so the static quo between them and the regime. But now, after this allegiance, they are saying that there will be an agreement on Geneva Agreement, so... So the situation changed. You didn't see that, or I'm mistaken about this issue.
Well, you see, from the point of view of Russia, I think that the situation didn't change, because the
not the Russians, the Americans now. The Americans agree what the Russians suggested. This is what I'm saying, not the Russians changing their mind.
Well, let's move on.
Let's see.
Any other comments or questions? Yes.
I hope you will speak some minutes about the relation between Putin and the Orthodox Church and the Orthodox communities in this region here in the Middle East.
You see, Patriarch who wants to keep under his patronage Orthodoxy in the region, but sometimes he's successful and sometimes not. As to Putin, he would be very glad if the influence of Russian Orthodox some church so will raise some here, and even sometimes several times he mentioned that one of the reasons of necessity for Russia to be present in some of these regions is the protection of church. And there is a cooperation between Putin and Kirill in this field.
Maybe a final question.
Hi, Eva Boiron. I was wondering, you spoke about conflicts in Russia when opposition to construction of new mosque and terrorist attacks in Moscow.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
What is the position of the public opinion of Russian population towards the Muslim community in Russia, and do they support Putin's activities with Arab states?
Majority of Russian, majority, I emphasize, even they don't know about the situation in Middle East. So that's quite normal, with the exception of Moscow or St. Petersburg, because in general some Russian population is very indifferent, very passive, believe me, yes. Even in Irkutsk, in Siberia, for instance, they refuse to know something about the situation in Caucasus. It's their country, but it's some so far. But in Moscow, in St. Petersburg, in big cities, I think that majority support the position of Putin. Why? Because Putin and his ideologies all the time, they repeat that Russia has to keep his position as almost a superpower. You see? And that's quite normal, because the ideology, official ideology, is becoming more and more a quasi-Soviet.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Approach the microphone.
Soha from Common Space Initiative. I'm just wondering, especially when Paul raised the question, how does Russia look at the diversification or the diverse Islamic regimes, and if they really homogenize those regimes or those countries, how much can we analyze Russia's positions or interest in the region vis-a-vis the gas export to Europe and the competition now rising to export gas to Europe and the various pipeline projects that are arising from various powers outside of Russia's power?
Well, your question is quite complicated. Well, I think that in this field, I mean pipelines, some gas lines, and so on, the relations between Russia and Arab world are very difficult. Only one exception could be Algeria. There, the situation is more or less are normal. But if you remember, 3 years ago, Russia wanted to create a gas consortium with Qatar, Iran, and Algeria. It failed, yes? Russia pay more attention to cooperation with Turkey. And now this cooperation is rather successful. But anyway, I think that in a shortcoming future, Russia will survive against a tragedy. You understand so why? Because American gas and so on. That will be indeed a real tragedy. And since last year, they began to discuss it. Even Putin himself, he raised this question. It's very painful for him. And just there is just even I don't know how to comment this idea. Somebody I could hear that Russia that why some Russia some refuse to totally support some Bashar because the instability inside Syria doesn't permit to Qatar it and to Iran to construct a gas line. Just, I doubt. But I think that this explanation, this idea has to be taken into consideration too.
Well, it is Friday afternoon, and I think we can end a bit earlier than we usually do. But really, thank you, Alexei, for giving us a very enlightening window on a very complex situation. Something that now when we read about we will understand much more, and I would like to thank everybody for joining us here today. Enjoy the rest of your stay in Lebanon, Alexei, before you go back to
Washington.
You're going to Washington?
Yes.
Ah, yes, well, eventually back to Moscow. Thank you.
Thank you.